Please take a look inside your packets. You'll see the revised preliminary SMS on House Bill 2103. What I did, in effect, after the public hearing was updated and the issues discussed, in fact, there is one applicant. As of the time of this writing, we were not able to determine the benefit of the tax exemption. Just moments before committee put on top of your packets the revenue impact statement, which delineates impact on local governments and also state governments. So please take a look separately at a revenue statement for House Bill 2103 that does indicate both local and state, both income and property tax impact. From the public hearing, we also heard testimony relative and questions relative to the structure of the program facilities, promoting potentially undesirable competition between cities and counties, the expectation of expanding or new enterprises to be offered incentives, the distribution of foregone tax revenues across the state when they're not paid for within that enterprise zone, the fact that it does not affect public education districts. There is a clause in this bill that essentially exempts its impact on education or school districts and educational service districts. The desire to examine projections for possible success in the future. There is some information that's available. However, we're still taking a look at how viable that information is. The paradox of enterprises applying for a 3 to 5 year enterprise zone program and not this 7 to 5 year program, potentially the two programs,
7 to 15 year
programs, not conflict, but in fact, having both programs available to the same applicant. The complexity of current statutes, again, a lot of what this bill proposes to do is a restructure of Oregon revised statute, and the confusion that comes from that. The desire to examine feedback from communities on experiences in attracting new enterprise into this program. No information's been made available with regard to that. And the rationale used in reorganizing the complete series of statutes. Again, if you would please take a look at that revenue impact statement.
So the revenue impact statement, apparently from this one facility that has been placed in Douglas County, or is it placed now or is it still being constructed?
No, it's in Douglas County.
It's in place. The reduction in local property tax revenues was estimated to be $5.1 million per year, and the reduction in income taxes to state government is $2.6 million per year. Is it 62.5% of the payroll at
right.
the facility?
And again, those are foregone taxes that without the facility wouldn't exist there now. That $4.1 million payroll would not exist potentially if this enterprise zone had not been available to offer to this company. That's argumentative and open for discussion, but the point proponents indicate that these are foregone tax revenues that may not have ever existed. The jobs and the payrolls may not have ever existed without the enterprise zone.
Representative Walker.
Thank you. Are we in work session?
We're in work session. Okay. We've opened a work session.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I have a question. You know, I was never really that great at math, but I added up the reduction in local property tax revenues, which is 5.1, and the tax credit of state government 2.6. That comes to 7.7, and the payroll is 4.1. Am I correct?
I think that's correct. The payroll is 4.1, not the tax revenues from the payroll itself.
Right. The payroll is 4.1 that it's adding to the community, but they're getting 7.7 in credits to the state and the county.
That looks like that's accurate, and I think that would continue for up to 15 years, depending upon the agreement with the local government. Representative Bates?
Just taking it one step at a time, local government, reduction in local property tax revenues. What were the, is this, Dan, with that building or whatever, or land is sitting right now, there's some tax revenue to the county, right?
Representative Bates, I can't answer the question. I really don't know. I know it's Roseburg Timber.
I'm sorry, what's the question, Representative?
What I'm trying to get to is this. There's probably some tax revenue coming to the county from this piece of land or building or whatever was there before they did the reconstruction or before they put a new building up. when you put a new building up, your tax revenue from that would normally, of course, increase because the value of that property has increased so much. So are we looking at a dramatic drop for the county in actual taxes or expected taxes? That's an important issue here, I think, of whether you're looking at a big drop that you might have had or whether you actually are reducing taxes.
I think if the facility qualifies under the criteria of the statute and the local government is sponsoring and reached agreement with the investor, the private company that makes the investment, then I think the facility is exempt from property taxes for between 7 and 15 years, as I understand the statute. That actual construction of that facility. Would you like to hear from someone from the department about that, Representative?
I just want to be sure I'm clear on that, because I want to make sure that the county says, yes, we want to do this, and we're willing to give those taxes up, and it's bringing in new industry to our
like
county.
Would someone from the department like to come up and respond to Representative Bates's inquiry?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, my name is Mike Burton. I'm the Assistant Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. As I understand Representative Bates' questions, he's asking if the county, Douglas County in this case, is willing to forego an increase in taxes in order to see an investment in basically a new plant built in Douglas County. And the answer to that question is yes. That's the premise behind it.
Thank you.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think one of the questions that I heard Dr. Bates say, I'm sorry, Representative Bates say, which maybe I was just hearing a different question, was the land was taxed before they built onto it under the this credit. Is that land, do they still pay taxes on the land and so forth, not including the expansion? So they pay at the old rate but don't pay the new tax? Is that correct?
Chairman Witt, Representative Walker, under the normal enterprise zone program, the standard three-year exemption, that is how the process works. In this case, the land is also exempt.
So all the taxes are exempt. Okay. That was my question.
We are getting a revised revenue impact relative to local governments, so Dan's handling that out now.
But the key thing is the county has agreed to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. The local government has to have agreed to the program. Mm-hmm. Now, in this bill, there's the long-term enterprise zone fund set up within the bill. Now, doesn't that flow some money back to the county? Tell me could you explain that, Mr. Burton, please?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, the answer is yes. There is a provision under the program that would return 30% of the taxes that are paid to the state, 30% of the first $1 million of income tax. The first $1 million of income taxes is not exempt. The firm will pay that $1 million, but 30% of that will be returned to the county by the state. So the state does make a payment to the county.
Is this from corporate income taxes or taxes on wages?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, my name is Art Fish with the Department of Administrative Services, but on rotation from the Oregon Economic Community Development Department. And yes, the Enterprise Zone Fund, or whatever it's called that this bill would set up, is simply a structure to deal with what the law currently has in it, by which of the corporate income taxes that the company does pay, that for which its credit does not cover, that 30% of that goes into this fund that has been distributed to the local taxing districts up until the amount of whatever taxes would not have been paid on the property tax side. And so it would be the county in this case, and as I understand, a fire district, and if our memory serves, a small cemetery district.
So I think Representative answered your question. The local government has to be a sponsor, but there's some expectation or anticipation, at least potentially, that some of these revenues will come flowing back from the state through income tax collections.
So to make it clear, the tax losses we're seeing we're actually foregoing taxes that are being generated as new taxes, really. We're not, the $4.1 million payroll wouldn't have been there at all if this hadn't come in. We'll be picking up individual income tax on that payroll. But the corporate taxes wouldn't have been there either, and about the first third of those are not exempt, and some of that money will roll back to the county and the rest will come to the state. So we're foregoing some potential increase in taxes. We're not actually taking tax losses.
Representative, I think that's speculative, because we don't know for sure if this facility, there's the one facility that's been cited here, we don't know that it would have been cited but for this program or not, with any certainty. Mm-hmm. We don't know what might have been cited there in lieu of it, and we don't know what work the people that are working there might have been doing instead of working there.
Okay.
So, this, in fact, reference is made in your staff write-up that this is a kind of a rural counterpart to the strategic investment program. That's probably a fairly fair analysis. They're not totally on point, but Washington County, for example, has what Representative Primmel three times used the strategic investment program to site facilities, twice for Intel, I think once for another firm.
Yep.
And I think a couple other counties have too. I think Lane County has, and I think Multnomah County has. But in those cases, you know, it's been argued would these facilities have been placed here but for the tax breaks the strategic investment program made available. And, that's a question that it's pretty hard to answer with any certainty. Representative Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just clarify what Representative Bates was talking about just now otherwise. And that is this a loss in revenue, or the way that it's phrased here, the loss in revenue is estimated at $350,000 a year. The reduction in local revenues is $5 million. Is this a reduction to the increase? Or is it actually, is there a net reduction of taxes at the local level?
This is foregone taxes that would have been collected if the facility had been sited there anyhow.
Correct,
But we don't know for sure.
But it's not a reduction of taxes that they're receiving now.
That is, I think that is correct.
Okay, it's a reduction of taxes that they would have collected. Because, it's a very different situation if they're losing $350,000 a year of taxes they're receiving now than if they're losing for a period taxes that they would be collecting in the future. That's the distinction.
I think that is correct. Now, the payroll and the credit based upon payroll, who knows if these folks would have been working somewhere else or not?
Yes.
I mean, it's...
That part is not as of concern to me as the distinction. Is that a correct interpretation?
I think that is correct, yeah. We're not reducing. Before this facility went into place and there was a property tax, there was a property to assess a tax on,
okay.
We're not going backward from that point. We're not taking money that was coming in prior to that point. We're simply not taxing the new facility.
And if I could follow up with a second question, and that is when you said that Douglas County has agreed to this, how does that agreement take place? How do they manifest that? Do they actually sign off on something? Is it the Board of Commissioners that, can you explain that process to me?
Chairman Witt, Representative Carlson, there is an agreement. This is not an automatic exemption like the standard enterprise zone. This is a negotiated agreement. The local jurisdiction has to enter into an agreement with just the business concern. And in the case of state income taxes, the state through the governor has to enter into an agreement. Both of those are negotiated.
So if Douglas County were to say we're not signing off, then this wouldn't happen. Is that correct? Okay. Thank you.
Representative Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, going away from the one example in Douglas County, our previous testimony was that the program was created in 1997. There's only been one party that's been certified under the program. What sort of resources has the department put into the program in terms of human resources that they've put into the program, contacts that they've made? I mean, I'm wondering, you're asking to re-up a program that appears to have had one person attracted or one entity attracted. And I know going away from the tax situation, I know also how important it is for areas to have the employment that this could potentially provide. I mean, that has a much broader impact in terms of having the public out there that can visit the businesses, that can pay the other taxes that are necessary, do the things that are necessary. So that's a broader benefit than simply just the loss in taxes. But you've only attracted one. And how much resources have been put into this?
Chairman Witt, Representative Devlin, I don't know for certain. I would only guess. I would guess that we spent just a significant part of the total effort in these hearings and work sessions. I would guess that the total effort spent on the order of tens of hours in terms of staff time and effort. There have been hearings in the past that we've attended, and we're attending these. We did our economist did an analysis of the Roseburg project. That is more or less the extent of our effort. It hasn't been a large effort.
Well, I think the appropriate question, Mr. Burton, is how much time has the department put into this program since its inception?
Sure.
Or prior to its inception when you started to construct this program? This is going back to the mid-90s.
In terms of
marketing
the program?
Total cost the department has put into not just marketing, but coming up with this program, meeting with other stakeholders, formulating the program, getting the program into statute, adopting the program, marketing the program, so on and so forth. I would have to believe over the last 4 or 5 years, that's a significant amount of time.
Chairman, we weren't significantly involved in the creation of this statute in the first place. That was an effort that was undertaken largely by Nucor Steel and happened with us commenting, not unlike the comments we're making here now. We did do a piece of work. Maybe Art could give you a better estimate. Most of the time we've dedicated to this has been his time. He did meet significantly with Representative Simmons during the 99 session when the rules or the statute was adjusted. But my estimate is tens of hours.
How about the time that was spent with Nucor and other people that expressed an interest in this program or this, you know, who we were marketing this program to and then who never utilized it?
I'll yield to Mr. Fish that he has spent the time, but...
Mr. Fish?
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, there's been time spent going back to the 97 legislature, and time was spent by people working with Nucor as they would with potentially any prospective business investor at that time. Interaction with the legislature was not insignificant, but it was mostly additional time spent by our director, our legislative coordinator, and myself on an impromptu basis. Some work was done in the interim between the 97-99 legislature to sort out some legal issues. So we did expend some attorney general time, again, some of my staff time, and we didn't market it very heavily at that time. Of course, there was a lot of efforts going on that took various agency personnel involved with the Coos Bay area with respect to Nucor, but we didn't market that program very much because it really was very difficult to market at the time. The thresholds were very high. And though the Nucor investment would have been much larger than those thresholds, it wasn't a very feasible option for many areas. Since the changes that took place about a year and a half ago, there hasn't been a great deal of effort done except to provide information to clarify how this works and to be ready for people. And then I'm sure on the ground some of our people that work with investments and the ones that might use this will take quite a while to develop. They just won't appear and you sign the paper and that's it. There's been time put into it over the years, but it's really just been a part of our usual work. Whether we could market it further and do more with it, I leave to Mike maybe could comment on that.
Chairman Witt, members of the committee, I wouldn't comment on that. We could market the program more aggressively. As Art says, there aren't very many opportunities. I would instead comment that we spent a lot more time with Nucor before this bill even came into existence than we've spent on this program. It hasn't taken a lot of effort. The effort we invested in Nucor and the issues that Mr. Fish references in the Coos Bay area were issues we would have, we spent years with Nucor before this program came available.
Representative Devlin.
Just a very basic question. Why do you want to retain the program?
Chairman Witt, Representative Devlin. The program, we believe, offers an attractive incentive to significant investments in parts of Oregon that might not otherwise get a second glance. We are aware of a company that is considering Klamath Falls right now. It's a three-state competition, four sites. But there are sites also in California and I believe Idaho that this company is looking at. We believe that a significant advantage that is offered by the Oregon site is the potential for this person. We see value in that. And to the extent that local communities are willing to make a fairly significant sacrifice to make that happen and get at the benefits of employment and the long-term benefit of the investment, and then indirect benefits from purchases made by the company, I believe there's merit to this program.
Representative Broad?
I might just add, I know these gentlemen are aware of it, but this is a very critical part of the package that has been offered in my area, that if you can think of the impact of 1,000 new jobs in Klamath Falls, and that's what this company offers us, it's pretty impressive. So.
Representative Walker.
Yes, thank you. Gentlemen, could you respond to my math inquiry? Were you listening, and was I correct that there's $7.7 million in tax credits and only $4.1 million in payroll?
The payroll...
If I can, for a minute, Representative, remember there's a new revenue impact statement that came out. It shows that it's about $350,000
per year
on property taxes, the $2.6 million in payroll taxes per year. Those seems to be consistent between the two reports.
All right.
And the payroll impact is per year, $4.1 million per year.
Okay.
So over a 15-year term, that $2.6 million in foregone taxes, income taxes, would be $39 million if it held at that percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
On that order.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments or questions at this point? Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the property tax exemption under the program, does it apply simply to the property taxes attributable to the local government, or does it apply to both those and those attributable to education?
Chairman Witt represents them. Mr. Devlin, it's all property tax.
Okay. So there is another cost associated here in the sense that since those property taxes are not being paid, the state has had to fill in more with general fund dollars to bring them up to the level under the school formula.
And I think on top of that, Representative, they get spread through the system. So when the local government foregoes property taxes, it doesn't directly impact that school district in that particular area. It impacts school districts everywhere, arguably. Of course, we then determine what state revenue we're going to put in with the local property taxes, but it has an effect throughout the system. Okay, is there any other comments? Okay, let's go ahead. Is there someone to provide a motion? Representative Garrard, would you like to provide a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we move House Bill 2103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Garrard moves House Bill 2103 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Frommel,
can I just ask one more question of the two fellows that we have sitting here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
And that is relevant to Nucor, because I remember specifically working on that issue last session in both the subcommittee and a committee. And so the big difference between the bill that we did for Nucor and what this is that Roseburg Timber or Lumber Company has already made the investment in the county and they're building the plant. But in the Coos Bay situation with Nucor was still kind of thinking about it. And so after we went through all of the exercises of passing the law and getting everything just right for them, then they decided that it wasn't such a great idea after all, and so they went somewhere else. Is that correct?
Chair Witt, Representative Crummell, in all cases, enterprise zone benefits only applied to new investments. So the Roseburg Forest Product investment had not been made yet. It's in process now. They're building the plant now.
Right.
They may have completed
it. Well, but that's what I mean, is that they're making a big investment, and it's already assured that they're making the investment. It's not, we're not throwing something out here to bet on the come.
At this point, that's the case, and this deliberation has no impact on the Roseburg project at this point. They will receive the benefit.
But the county wants to be able to extend this benefit to them so that, for whatever reason, they want to do that.
Chairman Witt, Representative Krummel, the benefit, the statute is on the book. The benefit has been agreed to, has been negotiated and signed off on. What we're talking about here today is extending the sunset, extending the, continuing the program so that it might be applied in other circumstances.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm ready.
Okay. Representative Carlson?
I have a question. Of the fiscal impact statement says no revenue impact, and we just got a revenue statement. Is there any reason why we would not send this to Revenue Committee? No, I'm talking about the staff measure summary.
Yeah.
Here says no revenue impact on the revised staff measure summary that we got today, and now we just received a revenue statement, and there is a general fund impact potentially. I'm just curious procedurally whether we send it to the floor or whether we send it
to revenue. We send it to the floor. If we choose to move the bill, we're moving it to the floor. There's no subsequent referral to revenue.
Well, I understand there's no subsequent referral, but is there any threshold at which revenue is supposed to see things or not?
No. This bill goes directly to the floor. Remember, this is a program that's in effect. Mm-hmm. What we are doing here is we're making some changes in the program, and we're extending it. We're extending the sunset. Mm-hmm. Any other discussion? Okay, Dan, go ahead and call the roll. The roll's on the motion to move the bill to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson excused. Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Krummel?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Walker.
Given the new legislative fiscal for legislative revenue with the new numbers, the program pencils out. So I'm going to yes.
That's an aye. Representative Witt.
No. Okay, the bill goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Garrard, would you like to kill the bill?
Yes.
Carry the bill.
Yes, Bill, I carry the bill.
That's got to be
a little
funny
to
say that.
Will
you kill the bill? Did you ask him to kill the bill? It's just right in.
It really is. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2103 and open a work session on House Bill 2104. Dan, bring us up to date on 2104.
House Bill 2104, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is the expanding the current statute on international trade offices to change managers and employees, the words managers and employees, and to change that to establish and operate. What that does is expands the intent of what's in statute such that ECDD, Oregon Economic Community Development Department, can streamline, but in fact find more innovative ways to operate those offices overseas. The issues discussed last time was potential, the funding impact within Economic Community Development Department, the emphasis on assisting low-income entrepreneurs, performance measures to determine the program's success for the international trade offices, the desire for information from OECD on the effectiveness of current foreign trade program, and a request for information on the expressed authority for existing contracts with consultants. We did receive the information on expressed authority for existing contracts with consultants, and according to the Department of Justice, the ECD does have that authority within current statute to be able to contract for consultants within current ORS language. So the desire for information on the effectiveness of current foreign trade program that has been previously distributed to you, but in fact I'll encapsulate that what is happening is there was an agreement that was struck 2 years ago potentially for 20 to 30 contracts in the next two-year period with the country of China, and specifically only a few contracts have been struck to date with regard to foreign trade. Also brought up was information with regard to expenditures on their budgets, and they are here to answer any of those questions, but in fact they are currently expending a little over their budget in this program, and the exact numbers aren't finalized yet, but it appears that this program is up and running, but the effectiveness has been called into question with regard to only one or two contracts out of an anticipated 20 to 30 that were hoped for. Senator Yee wanted me to make sure that I brought that information out.
Okay. We're in work session on House Bill 2104. Discussion, or do we have a motion?
I have a question.
Representative Carlson.
The staff report. I was listening for it, and I didn't hear it, and maybe you said it, and I just didn't hear it. The express authority for the existing contracts with consultants, did you have information on that?
Yes,
and did
I do.
You through that?
I have a letter from Peter Shepard, Deputy Attorney General, that in fact ORS 285A.090 directs the Economic Community Development Department to consult and advise with, coordinate the activities for technical assistance and encouragement in the field of foreign trade in promoting their own trade activity. He goes on further to say that he believes that within that current statute and OAR 125020 out of DAS Administrative Services, then in fact the agency is permitted to contract and for services that require specialized skills, knowledge, and resources not available within the agency, or that the work cannot be done in a reasonable time with the agency's own workforce, independent impartial evaluation is required, or it is less expensive to contract for the work. He cites
285A090. What paragraph?
So, Mr.
Seven.
So he cites the mission of the Foreign Trade Office and also an OAR with regard to allowing all state agencies for those criteria that they can't provide the expertise or don't have the person power to do the job. In fact, they're allowed to contract for those services. OECD believes their interpretation from Pete Shepard is that, in fact, their contracting for consultants in international trade offices falls under that ability to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I follow up?
Yes, Representative Carlson.
The question would be then, in the staff measure summary, it says that it does not authorize OECD to use contracted consultants. So this AG opinion, without, if this bill didn't pass with the AG opinion, according to them, they have statutory authority right now. Is that what we're saying?
They would argue that they have statutory authority. I don't think they do.
Okay.
That's the AG's opinion. Okay. I'd like to see a legislative council opinion. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of beside the point. I think what we're trying to determine here is, do we want to give them that the authority? There's no point in squabbling necessarily if they have the authority, they don't have the authority. I guess the question becomes, do we think they should have the authority? They're asking us to give them the explicit statutory authority.
Legislative Council, if I could, Mr. Chair, had generated the language establish and operate so that it would not only give OECDD more flexibility and other than just providing managers and employees, but that in fact it would cover the situation with regard to contracting with consultants in those foreign trade offices. So the legislative council that generated this really landed on those three words, establish and operate, to encapsulate that meaning. So.
Okay. Is there a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Knope moves House Bill 2104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion?
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Crummell.
I just want to clarify one thing. So basically what we're doing is we are saying that it's okay to do for OECD to do something that they've been doing anyway. We're just sort of giving them the blessing, right?
I think that's part of the bill. I think the other part is it allows them to contract locally overseas for services that right now they may not have authority to do. They may have to go through DAS to get certain products or use DAS-approved contracts.
So this would allow them to use their own approved contracts?
The contract overseas, where they have their trade offices. Isn't that correct, Dan? So I think what it's doing is it's certainly strengthening, it's certainly addressing this issue, can you use consultants overseas? And I think it gives them probably some broader authority or to contract overseas for things they need overseas in terms of their mission relative to foreign trade.
Then in that respect, will the Attorney General need to look at all of those contracts, thus driving their cost to the AG's office up?
No, I don't think so. I think this the language of this bill gives them what they want without the AG having to review it. I guess I don't.
So the AG won't be reviewing their contract. I guess what I'm getting at, one of the things that we've been running into is a situation where the AG agencies have been having the AG review contracts, and that's one of the reasons why we're looking at having DAS, if I'm not mistaken, having DAS have sort of a form.
Does the department want to come and address Representative Crummell's question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I'm Doris Penwell from Economic and Community Development Department. To answer your question, Representative Crummell, what the real purpose of the bill is to allow the department, through contracted services that we have authority to maintain, to expedite the work they do by not having to go through the long list of statutory requirements that any contractor doing business with the state of Oregon must be subject to unless they are exempted from them, like printing, purchasing, subcontracting, et cetera, et cetera. I provided a letter to the committee earlier that listed all of those statutory references where it makes it sort of more time-consuming and much more ineffective in trying to deliver services if in a foreign trade office we have a contractor that is working for us and they are required to deal with Oregon and Oregon processes rather than being able to do the work quickly and efficiently in the country in which they're working. So that's the real purpose of this bill. And the language was agreed to by the Attorney General's office and the Legislative Council to be sure that it fit all the circumstances that we require.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, any other discussion on the motion? Okay, Dan, you want to go ahead and call the roll? The motion is to move House Bill 2104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson excused. Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
No. Okay, House Bill 2104 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who would like to carry it? Is there a volunteer? Representative Crummell, why don't you carry the bill?
Okay.
Be okay?
Yeah.
All right.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, I will close the work session on 2104, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2858. Okay, we have an amendment for this bill.
We
have it. Is it the dash one?
Yes.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Walker?
Are we skipping over 2131?
2131, the amendment wasn't ready.
Okay, thank you.
But we'll hopefully have that up next week.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This creates the Office of Small Business within OECDD. It appropriates an unknown amount from the general fund for that. Again, this is a small business bill with regard to creating this Office of Small Business was one of the recommendations from the Governor's Task Force on Small Business. It was the Small Business Governor's Small Business Council. Essentially, the original bill itself creates the Office of Small Business, gives it a mission statement, and in fact, the Dash 1 amendment that you should have attached with it also enacts another one of those recommendations, and that is to create the Governor's Small Business Council, which provides the advisory capacity to that Office of Small Business. I'll give you a minute to just take a look at that Dash 1 amendment or find it, but it should be attached to your SMS.
It's only a page and a half long.
Right. It is, it's the Dash 1 amendment. It essentially the governor appoints a 12-member council. The term of office is 4 years, begins on July 1st of each year, and then in fact talks about how that council is funded, essentially through ECDD budget, and in fact determines the term length of the four groups of three of the members in 2003, 2005, 2006, on the second page of the Dash 1.
I have a question.
The motion, by the way, was our motion to move this to Ways and Means?
There's been no motion yet.
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, we haven't had a motion.
We haven't introduced this amendment yet, so we need to.
Okay, that's right. Representative Walker, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the amendment. It's creating a small business council, but it already exists.
It's temporary. It's not within this portion of statute. It makes it permanent.
I see. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2858.
Okay, Representative Canope moves the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 2858. Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I only have one question about the Dash 1s. With the effective date of the bill, will this in fact make the three in, under number four that shall serve for a term end on line 21 of the second page, three shall serve a term ending June 30, 2006? That doesn't create a five-year term, does it? Because if it does, it would be unconstitutional, I believe, because I think we have a...
When does the bill go in?
This came up in another bill that I worked on.
The bill would go into effect, what, January 1?
January 1.
January 1.
2002.
Okay.
So 4.5 years.
It doesn't exceed the...
4.5 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any objection to adoption of the Dash 1 amendments? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2858 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Canope moves House Bill 2858 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yes.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a great idea. I met with someone in my community who serves on the Small Business Council and spent about an hour or so with her talking about what the council has been able to do, what they need to help small business. And I think this bill is very important to continuing that work. So I would hope that we can find the funding down in Ways and Means to put this forward.
Great. Representative Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a small business person myself, and I certainly applaud the work of the Small Business Council. I'll be voting yes on the bill to send it to Ways and Means, but I just want to put it on the record that I'm not entirely thrilled with adding yet another commission into the statute, with all that entails, and also in my long list of personal priorities, looking at human services and all the reductions, general fund for this project is not very high on my list. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Devlin.
Would the good representative consider in her next session introducing a bill that says for every commission we create, we have to take away one?
I would love to do that.
Well, I suspect that the required appropriation on this would be relatively small, and I see this as a valid and valuable economic development tool whereby we're providing services to small businesses throughout the state to help them succeed and hire additional employees and bring about some good progress in development community to community. So I like this bill. I think it has a very broad application in terms of who can benefit from it, unlike some of the other bills that we hear, and I like that broad application, and I think over the long run, I think that's helpful to our state. So I'll be supporting the bill as well. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out that one of the things that we might want to do, and not I don't know that we need to do it in statute, but there needs to be an understanding of what a small business is versus what a micro business is. Because with all due respect, Representative Carlson, you probably have a micro business as opposed to a small business. A small business is like Starbucks. That's a small business. Or some of these other businesses that come in are doing millions of dollars in business. A micro business is something like what, you know, when you have a single coffee shop, like the Beanery would be a micro business because it's one shop, you know, and they don't make millions of dollars of investment. And I think that that's, you know, this type of a commission, I think, is probably going to be looking at the Starbuckses of the world as opposed to the Beaneries of the world in terms of, or of the state, I should say, in terms of how they come in.
Mr. Chair, if I could just respond with all due respect to Representative Crummell, I'm not sure that Starbucks is going to need a government council to figure out how to make it millions of dollars.
Well, I didn't say they needed one. I'm just using them as an example as far as what is considered a small business versus what is considered a.
Representative, you want to start before, might want to stop before you get even further.
In other words, when you're in the hole, quit digging, right?
Yes, Representative. If I might.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the definition of micro business in the handy dandy little booklet that was provided to us from the Governor's Small Business Council, and it is a generally defined as businesses with four or fewer employees. And it is estimated there are 263,000 micro businesses in Oregon, including self-employed persons, which is about 95%. I'm one of those. And I suspect you are too, Representative Carlson.
Probably a micro business.
And that's the point that I'm making.
Yeah.
And a small business is, if you look in there, has 50 employees.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Finnup.
Oh, I just want to get a little piece of that action with Representative Crummell. Now that he's in, now that he's down in the hole, I want to kick a little dirt on him. Probably a Starbucks might qualify as a small business, but the Starbucks I think would not qualify as small business.
You might be right.
Okay, we have a motion on the bill to move it to Ways and Means with a due pass. Yeah. Any other discussion? Thankfully, there's no other discussion. Okay, Dan, go ahead and call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Knope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye. House Bill 2858 goes to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. I'm going to reopen a work session on House Bill 2103 for Representative Johnson to see if she would like to cast a vote. By the way, the vote on that, Representative, was, I guess I can chart what it was.
9-1. With one
I would be an aye on this one.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Representative Johnson votes aye on 2103. Close that work session. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2104.
Representative Johnson, a no on that one.
Representative Johnson votes no on House Bill 2104. I'll close the work session on House Bill 2104, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 275.
Thank you for your courtesy, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, do we need a carrier to Ways and Means?
No, I'm sorry. That was looking at the wrong thing.
Okay, go ahead. Dan, would you tell us about Senate Bill 275, please?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill renames the Brownfields Redevelopment Loan Fund to the Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. And by that, it permits the fund to be used for both grants as well as loans. It makes remedial actions removal of hazardous substances eligible for fund money. Authorizes making grants to municipalities and nonprofit organizations, declares an emergency effective on passage. A brownfield is real property where expansion or redevelopment is complicated by environmental contamination. Approximately 2,000 sites have been identified in Oregon with suspected or confirmed contamination. This fund was created in 1997 following a recommendation of a task force
created in 1995. There are similar laws in a number of other states listed. Discussions in the Senate Committee on Business, Labor, and Economic Development are listed there and include these funds can be used with federal funds that the rural areas have need for help from this fund. There are barriers to redevelopment, which include liability, availability of regulatory tools, and a lack of knowledge about brownfield redevelopment. The emphasis of this fund is redevelopment, not environmental cleanup per se, and there are restrictions when the grant recipient is liable for release of hazardous substances. The Senate vote is indicated on your SMS. It has no revenue impact, and the fiscal statement is attached.
Okay, do we have people who signed up to give testimony on the bill? Mr. Harlan Levy?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Harlan Levy, staff attorney for the Oregon Association of Realtors. OAR is a nonprofit trade association which represents over 12,000 realtor members statewide. OAR thanks you for the opportunity to present testimony in support of Senate Bill 275. We support this bill because it relates to brownfield redevelopment. Brownfields are abandoned or underutilized industrial and commercial facilities where expansion or redevelopment is complicated due to actual or perceived environmental contamination. Revitalization of brownfields benefits communities by increasing the tax base, creating jobs, and rejuvenating neighborhoods. Senate Bill 275 would expand Oregon's brownfield program to allow the Brownfield Redevelopment Loan Fund to be used for grants in addition to loans. The bill also allows the fund to be used for a wider range of environmental actions, such as cleanup activities. OAR supports Senate Bill 275 because it will lead to increased redevelopment of brownfields. It will help overcome some of the economic barriers currently associated with cleanup, and that is especially true in the rural areas of the state. In conclusion, OAR believes that Senate Bill 275 is sound public policy because the state has a definite interest in recycling these lands. This bill passed the Senate with 28 votes, and we respectfully request that this committee refer it to the floor of the House with a due pass recommendation. Thank you for this opportunity to present testimony. I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Questions for Mr. Levy? Can you tell us how this fund is generated, where the dollars come from, how they're maintained, and how this bill would propose to use them?
Chair Witt, I would defer that question to a representative of the department. They're more inclined
okay.
to be able to give you more details on that.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Levy? Thank you, Mr. Levy.
Thank you.
Stephen Santos. Hello, Mr. Santos. Go ahead and state your name for the record and go ahead and give us your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Witt, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Santos. I'm the Brownfields Redevelopment Coordinator for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Mr. Levy and the committee administrator has already given you a great deal of background, so my comments will be brief. Senate Bill 275 proposes to modify some key provisions to my agency's Brownfields Enabling Statute. It will make the program more responsive to the needs of Oregon. The major changes include expanding the program to be a grant program as well as a loan program, expands the eligible activities beyond environmental evaluations to include the full range of environmental actions such as cleanup. These changes will allow the state to use this program in tandem with federal funding to keep Oregon up to date with the national trend for assistance with for assistance for brownfields redevelopment. The changes this bill proposes are similar to programs already in effect in states such as Michigan, Massachusetts, and California. I'd like to just take a moment to talk about those two major provisions, starting with cleanup. The limitation to site assessments in the original statute has resulted in a funding resource gap for cleanup. The department receives approximately 6 inquiries per month with regard to brownfield redevelopment resources. The majority of the inquiries are for cleanup funding. Surveys by the Technical Assistance to Brownfields Communities Program at Oregon State University also indicate that the greatest need expressed by Oregon's communities for brownfields funding is in the area of cleanup. This legislation would resolve this issue. Moving on to grants, in some urban areas, both nationally and in Oregon, market forces and demand for real estate are strong enough to overcome the barriers to brownfield redevelopment. However, brownfields located in rural and economically distressed communities almost always require some level of public assistance for success. Therefore, this legislation would make it possible for grants to be made from the Brownfields Redevelopment Fund. Grants would be available to municipalities, which would be required to provide some level of match. And in some cases, grants will be available to non-municipalities if the subsequent redevelopment will result in a substantial public benefit. Given that the level of background information we received, I will conclude my prepared remarks. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Santos, could you explain what role the department played in the mill site redevelopment in Astoria?
We were a major partner in the mill site conversion project, which looked at 12 mill sites statewide. The Astoria mill site was the greatest success story within that project. We provided some state monies as well as some pass-through federal grants to that project, and which some of it went to for us.
Thank you for sharing that. That's in my district, and it's held up as one of the success stories for brownfield redevelopment. And I'm pleased to share with your colleague, the realtor, that two houses have now been built on that site, and they've sold the majority of the rest of them. So it brought an old, polluted mill site back into a very significant public benefit use, and it's a very attractive amenity in Astoria. Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Santos? Okay, thank you, Mr. Santos. Is there anybody else that would like to give testimony on House Senate Bill 275? Well, there's some representatives. Oh, you mean, well, that's okay right now. Okay, if not, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 275. Get a sense of the committee. Are you comfortable going into work session on this bill today? Okay. I'll go ahead and open up a work session. Representative Devlin on Senate Bill 275.
Mr. Chairman, moves Senate Bill 275 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Devlin moves Senate Bill 275 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Bates?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Devlin?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Enthusiastically, aye.
Representative Canope?
Aye.
Representative Crummell?
Excused.
Representative Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Excused.
Representative Witt?
Aye. Senate Bill 275 goes to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and I would enthusiastically request that Representative Johnson enthusiastically be the carrier.
And she enthusiastically accepts.
Thank you, Representative. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 275. Is there anything else that anybody would like to bring up today before we adjourn? If not, we will see you on Friday. Thank you. We're adjourned.
Cookies and fruit back here.
We should have had those.
Yeah.
Set a record.
Day late, yeah. $1. This does beat the previous.
Four bills, too.
The vice chair's record.
The vice chair's record.